Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, and we're going to hang 10, dude.
Extreme sports! Extreme sports!
You're embarrassing me.
I was practicing the surfer thing, and it just completely went away when we went live.
Yeah, it seems more like that's more Bill and Ted than it is Point Break, if I'm honest.
He does do it in one of the scenes.
He does though.
One scene, but Bill and Ted
totally
is the entire
saved
movie.
Your life, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, going into Point Break, that was actually his big break as an action star.
Yeah.
He had a pretty good career, but Bill and Ted kind of set that back a little bit and kind of put him in that
goofy comedy guy role.
Yeah, yeah. He could only play the stoner skater boy kind of thing.
But so, he's great in Bill and Ted. He's funny.
Sure, he's great in Bill and Ted. He's also great in a lot of other things prior to Bill and Ted. Mm-hmm. So it kind of brought people back and like, oh yeah, he can do more than one thing.
Yes.
Arguably, some of his best work was prior to Bill and Ted.
For
I'm
sure.
Sorry, River's Edge.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. Permanent Record.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Recommend seeing it for everybody. It's a dark, but it's worth watching. It's a
motion suicide.
River's
Edge is pretty dark.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, his performances are early performances are underrated. I think that Bill and Ted's what's got him pigeonholed is sort of the goofy, even to this day.
Yeah,
well, they're making great actor.
Isn't the next one? They're doing the next one. It's
oh yeah, they
it's
they,
coming.
They got Bill and Ted 3 scheduled now.
I'm so very excited about that.
That's
one.
Interesting. But before we hop into today's podcast, one, I should introduce you guys because I don't do that often, and every podcast could be somebody's first. So
true.
Please welcome Trish Coughlin to the
hey,
show,
everybody.
And he just dived right in here today, like skydived, because he was late, so he took the fastest extreme way possible to get here. Sam Stepanenko!
Hello, everybody. I missed you last week. Sorry.
But he's back.
Yeah, he's back.
He's back. And some sad news this week for you guys in the future, us in the past. Just saw the deaths of WWE, probably future Hall of Famer, Chyna. And a big one for probably everybody out there, including us, the death of Prince. Oh, and Merle Haggard.
Merle Haggard, yes.
Oh, wow.
Also passed away recently.
What is wrong with 2016? Yeah. Guys, I'm not advocating stalking, but keep an eye on these people.
Yeah.
keep them from danger.
Yeah, I am actually at the point where I'm running out of musical heroes. So, Henry Rollins, wrap yourself in bubble wrap, please. And for everybody listening out there, I'm pretty much over death at this point. It's not something I recommend. Don't do it. I'm telling you right now. Stop it.
Yeah, death, just because all the cool kids are doing it doesn't mean you should too.
You are no longer allowed. So yes. So it has been said by the invaders.
As we have decreed.
Yes.
Yes. Please, no more feeding Keith Richards.
Yeah, he's going through the quickening right now. Every time somebody else dies, he gets another 100 years added to his
sentence. Are you saying that all this is happening because there's actually Highlanders?
I think Keith Richards might be the only one left.
I don't know. If you're talking Highlanders, my theory was always that Betty White was the best Highlander because she outsurvived all the Golden Girls.
I would pay money to see her fight anybody from Highlander. With a sword, just I'd pay good money to see.
I think
that.
She's taken the life forces of all the Golden Girls, so she'd be tough to beat.
Yes, SNL, get on that.
Yeah, we just feeded some good skits for you guys. All right, so we are talking Point Break this week. Point Break from 1991 and directed by Kathryn Bigelow.
Yeah, huh.
This is one of her earlier directorial efforts. She was She had a hand in the screenplay as well when the writer's strike happened around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband, her former husband, that Avatar guy.
Yeah. Yeah, what's his name?
I don't know. You know, he's not, I don't think he's
ever. He did something called Titanic?
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to really pop with him, so we don't need to talk about that guy.
I'd rather we didn't, actually.
I don't know, Jason, we were talking about this before. You keep forgetting you don't like this movie.
I do.
I love this movie.
Okay, we all have first watches on this movie. I actually don't remember my first watch. I think it was probably mid-90s, after a few years after this movie came out. Everybody kept bugging me about it. It was probably Sam, honestly, who made me watch the damn thing. Or somebody at the video shop we worked at. I honestly don't remember. I do remember. It's one of these movies I keep forgetting I don't really like. And it was my idea this week, too. So I'm like, oh, I'm looking forward to watching these again.
And I love this.
I'm like, oh, wait. I don't like this movie that much. I really don't. Which is really odd because I love the first Fast and Furious movie, and it's the same fucking plot. So, I don't know. It probably comes down to performances and some of the writing on this. Catherine Bigelow's, I don't need to tell you anything about because, yeah, she likes her guns. She's Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty most recently, but also directed Strange Days, which I really liked,
mm-hmm.
Blue Steel, which isn't bad, and my favorite vampire movie of all time, Near Dark,
mm-hmm.
which Ooh, almost yeah. got the remake treatment. Platinum Dunes had the rights to it, and when they got the Twilight rights, they went that direction instead of butchering Near Dark. So thank you for going and doing whatever you do with bright, sparkly vampires and leaving my vampire.
Thank you for doing
alone.
The shit one and leaving the good one alone.
Yeah, so thank you for just not touching that. Thank you. Thank you very much, whoever is at Platinum Dunes.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you no longer have the rights. The screenplay was by two people, Rick King, and the screenplay story was also by W. Peter Iliff, who wrote the screenplays for Patriot Games and Varsity Blues. And Rick King did an interesting movie. The only one that I thought was noteworthy was Prayer of the Roller Boys, which I think is a bit of an underrated movie, but it had great choreography.
It was a great movie. I really enjoyed it.
I have
really, really dig that movie. And, of course, starring Patrick Swayze, Keanu Reeves, Gary Busey, and Lori Petty, with a nice smaller role by John C. McGinley and Vincent Klin, who we talked about in our Cyborg episode. So if you haven't heard that episode, go listen to remaking the Cyborg episode.
Oh, don't forget Anthony Kiedis is in it briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's an uncredited cameo by Tom Sizemore.
Yes.
I hope you guys caught that.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
You can't miss that. You can't.
Yeah. I kept looking around. I'm like going up everybody in this movie.
Agent Dietz. So...
And, who's the craziest?
Yeah. And of course, the most recent remake was just out in over Christmas time. I think it just was late December, early January. Kind of got buried after the hits, somewhere in between. And that was Point Break from 2015, directed by Erickson Kaur, who's more known as a cinematographer. We're going to totally get into that because all that cinematography experience shows on screen. And the screenplay was by Kurt Wimmer, who will probably come up multiple times during our run of this podcast.
Yep.
He wrote the now becoming a cult film, Equilibrium, and Salt, which was meh, and the Total Recall remake, and the upcoming Twister remake.
Oh.
What?
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
That bomb got dropped when I got here today. I was like, what?
Yeah. I should not tell you anything when you walk in, but yeah. I'm like, this is going to hurt you a little.
can we get a capital N, capital no? Good petition?
There's online petitions.
That is set for next year, so I don't know if it's already going into pre-production or has got any cast attached to it yet, but we could be talking about Twister sooner rather than later. Yeah. And, of course, that was starring Edgar Ramirez, Luke Bracey, Ray Winstone, Teresa Palmer-ish.
No, yeah, she's...
I say ish.
Yeah,
ish.
And that's good.
And Delroy Lindo, we got some other casts we'll probably mention along the way. But let's talk a little bit about Point Break 1991 first. It had a budget of $24 million, grossed in the U.S. a little over $43 million, and $83.5 million worldwide. So huge hit.
Yes, it's a good movie.
As opposed to the $105 million spent on the remake with an opening U.S. domestic take of just under $10 million and a U.S. gross. That was, the $10 million was his opening weekend.
Yeah.
The U.S. gross was close to $29 million. And a worldwide gross of $133.7 million. So the rest of the globe liked it a little bit more. And it barely made its budget back. So not a hit by any means. And giving the IMDb and Metacritic scores on Rotten Tomatoes, not a lot of people liked it.
No.
So we'll get into
that. I am included in that.
Yeah.
This is going to be a good episode.
I think so,
too.
I did
not like it.
Because... Yeah, I didn't mind it as much as the rest of the world did. At 9% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 5.4 on IMDb with a Metacritic score of 34 for the remake, as opposed to 7.2 out of 10 for IMDb, 58 Metascore, and a 68% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I don't know, I feel like maybe they got it backwards, but...
No. No, they didn't.
No, they didn't.
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, I'm going to run the trailer for the 1991, and we will be right back and get right into Point Break with Keanu Reeves.
It's the ultimate rush. There's nothing that comes close to it. Not even sex.
We are the ex-president.
It's total commitment. It's a real thin line between life and death. It's not tragic to die doing what you love. If you want the ultimate, you gotta be willing to pay the ultimate price.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and please don't forget to vote.
You wanna nail the bank robbers and be a big hero? Definitely. The ex-presidents are surfers.
You're trying to tell me the FBI is going to pay me to learn to surf?
Fear causes hesitation. Hesitation will cause your worst fears to come true.
He'll take you to the edge. Past it.
This is gonna be a great day, Johnny.
These taxpayers would like it, Utah, if they knew that they were paying a federal agent to surf and pick up girls.
Babes.
Big one.
The correct term is babes, sir. Whoa!
Interesting to tell me.
Caught my first tube this morning, sir.
Ah, that brings back memories. So, what was your first watches on this, guys?
I saw it in the theater. I did. I can't remember who I saw it with. I know it wasn't you, because you didn't want to go.
No.
I can't remember who I saw it with, but I did see it in the theaters when it was first released.
Yeah.
Did I not want to go? I don't even remember.
We had just started to spend time hanging out at that point. That was right around the time we met, was when that came out, when this came out.
Okay, it
was like late 1990, early 1991.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if we were even doing things like that together yet, but it may have been with my sister.
Yeah.
Possibly Mike. Actually, almost certainly Mike.
Shout out to Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah. Nobody else knows who Mike is, but we do.
But Mike knows who he is.
Mike knows who he is. Yes. He knows.
Yeah.
Because this was totally up Mike's alley, too, so.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, so. I know he was very excited about this one.
Yeah, I think I did watch this one in the theaters, but, like, many, many multiple viewings on VHS. And then once I could buy it, bought it on VHS.
Yeah.
I loved this movie.
Actually, I might have actually owned this movie. I don't think I ever watched it, though, after the one time I probably bought it. And I honestly don't remember my first watch. It was probably 1990s.
Oh, yeah.
And I know I saw it again sometime after that, having completely forgotten that I didn't care for the movie that much.
Well, I think it's one of those movies that was on TV as well, here and there.
I can almost guarantee that it was when you, Mike, Rob, and I were living together.
Oh, you're probably right. I would probably got forced to
you
watch it.
You probably got forced to watch it. Yeah. Because I know that Mike, at the time, really liked it. I don't know how he feels about it now. And I know that Rob was into that kind of thing, that kind of movie as well. And, I mean, I'll watch anything once, or if there's nothing else on, I'll watch whatever everybody else is watching. So
yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I'll give anything a chance once. Sometimes twice, because I may have got it wrong the first time.
Yeah.
And sometimes three times, because you have to watch it for the podcast.
Yes.
Well, yeah. So, sometimes I put myself through the torture again.
I don't think it's torture. This is
no, not at all. I'm not saying that about this one because it's okay.
It's really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
It's a lot of fun in the movie.
I find the acting in this movie really stiff. I find the dialogue.
Hey, Gary Busey is awesome.
The writing. you know, I don't remember. He's not as awesome as I remembered him to be in this movie.
I think with Jay, he was good, but he was not the caliber of performance he was capable of at that time.
Yeah.
Because this was pre motorcycle accident.
Yeah. Right. But he was funny. I liked
enjoyed
it better
his in the
character.
First Lethal Weapon movie, honestly. But.
But his character in this, I like, he's the comic relief. He's the fun part. He's the levity we need.
I didn't find
him
funny at all.
I did.
He had his moments.
Yeah. He's a goofy person.
But a lot of the humor...
I just felt his role was inconsistent.
It was a little inconsistent, but I felt that a lot of the humor in this movie wasn't as funny as I remember it being.
Yeah.
Right? I still like it, don't get me wrong. I still enjoy the movie for what it is. It is a candy movie. It's pure and simple.
I think, for me, once every 5 or 6 years kind of thing. Like, I don't mind revisiting the world, mainly because I like watching the surfing and skydiving and stuff like that. And that'll play into the next one as well. I liked all those scenes as well. Yeah. But overall, the overall story, I should like, because really, it's about a bunch of guys doing heists to fund an endless summer.
Yeah.
Finding the next wave, going from wave to wave to wave around the world until they come back around again. And, okay, that's interesting. It's also the plot of Fast and the Furious, which I love. But I'm not sure why it doesn't click with me in this one. But.
I think it was a great plot device. I think it's a great motivation.
Yeah.
I think the reason it doesn't click with you, Jay, is because they moved away from it and turned it into a buddy film almost for like the middle act was a buddy film.
Yeah, well, and you see such major shift in character for Patrick Swayze along the way, too. Yeah. Like, and he's very likable, and then he's so unlikable near the end.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I kind of, the whole point of that is like he's very likable and the point is to bring you into his world.
Well,
but at the end, though, if you threaten his world, that's when he becomes this terrible person.
Yeah, the chaos of everything falling apart around him, too, was driving him to do things he would not normally do.
Yeah, which is, if you get pushed into a corner.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to do some terrible, if you're somebody like this in your whole world, like he's looking at jail. This is not the person who's going to do well in jail. They'll do anything to avoid it.
Yeah.
And I mean, even he even says that Rosie is the one he goes to for these things that he doesn't like to do.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
He keeps him around because that's the weapon he needs to do stuff he can't do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, he was very charismatic. Even in the end, when he's unlikable, he's still charismatic, right? You can tell that he's struggling with his inner natures, right? To ensure his own survival. But at the same time, he doesn't want to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, no. I think it never occurs to him that it would catch up to him, I don't think.
Well, and I think that is the strength of the characters. I'm not saying they're very well written, but the characters themselves are always battling their own duality. You know, here's Keanu Reeves as Johnny Utah, and he's undercover with these people, and he likes them.
Yeah,
you know,
and
he falls
in love with the lifestyle.
Yeah, he falls in love with the lifestyle. He's conflicted between his duty and his friendships that are forming, and which leads to some of the dumbest scenes. But
and I think that might be right there. You just nailed on the head what it was about the movie you didn't like is that there was this really great underlying story about the perils of being undercover and the fighting the duality of your natures, and it wasn't fleshed out enough, I don't think. Like you could see that it was happening, but there was no rationale behind Johnny Utah's.
I think they were trying to hint at it with like the constrictiveness of like he really liked this whole other lifestyle. But whenever he goes into like the FBI office, the constrictiveness of this, like the very nature of like his job, doesn't really jibe with who he is as a person generally.
Yeah.
Like, he can be a very focused person, and he does believe in right and wrong, but he's finally seeing that there's a lot of... He likes people that he shouldn't like. His black and white is becoming all gray, and it's not working for him.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe the biggest fault for this movie is also exists in the remake.
Yes.
You know, the dual natures are not very well developed there either.
That's but there true. Is a line where I feel that it kind of explains the first movie as well as the second movie, where Edgar Ramirez says, oh, we knew you were a cop right away. I thought I could save you.
Yeah, that was interesting. I wish maybe they would have shown that earlier,
and
but
I
it
think
was a
that's
nice,
what's in the
it
other
was
one
actually
too.
A cool reveal. And that, yeah, I think it's a bit of subtext in the original. They don't come out and say it, but
no.
I always had the feeling that Swayze always knew. Bodie. Like, he knows, we should call him Bodie.
Bodie. Yeah. He it's knew a cool who name. He was. Yeah. Like, he knows Johnny Utah. You can easily look up where what happened to Johnny Utah. Like, I don't know if you could say, like, he went to the FBI, but you could find out he wasn't a lawyer.
Yeah.
Well, this is pre-Wikipedia.
True.
Yeah, it's not a lot. Internet was is still a fairly new thing for rich people.
Yes. And
but all you do is follow him, find out he doesn't go to a law office. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, no, these guys are careful, you know.
They case things out. They're not dumb.
Well, they establish that right away when you see their theft as the ex-president, which was a nice thing. They're all wearing the rubber masks and 90 seconds in and out with the bank. Very
never
fine
do the vault.
Oil. Yeah, they never got too greedy because it was just enough to
get
keep
by.
Going.
Yeah.
Yeah, just enough to keep going. And, you know, surfing, any hobby really, including podcasting, is not cheap.
No.
But
it leads into the whole thing.
There is maintenance with the boards and everything else. And
they
travel
don't work.
For them. Right? Yeah, and they don't work. They travel from wave to wave.
Yeah, they literally live to surf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is their lifestyle.
Vagabonds.
Yeah, living on the ocean. And it's a certain lifestyle that maybe I can't quite wrap my head around. But
you can see the allure.
It's kind of neat. I can see the allure and why they take, because they don't feel part of the machine.
No.
And they're both movies have a bit of an anti-establishment message. The remake has a very heavy environmental theme, but we'll get into that later on.
Yeah, and both are also very heavy about the spirituality of their sports.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right, about being connected with the world.
Yeah.
True. And like when you're talking about how it's like an anti-establishment thing, the whole point is like when they're robbing the banks, they're just taking the money out from the front tills. They're robbing banks, not people.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking away from this organization, not from other people.
Everything that's insured. And they still come in pretty heavy. And
but they do say, they're like, if you establish dominance, we don't have to hurt anybody. We just have to make sure that they'll submit and everything will be fine.
Yeah. In fact, the direct quote that Bodie says is project strength to avoid conflict. Which was a pretty good line.
And at the beginning, Pappas talks about they never shoot anybody. They've never hurt anybody.
Yeah.
They're good, clean, and they get it done. Which I think is kind of what made me kind of upset about one part of the movie where they get the wrong gang. Because I'm like, did you just completely ignore the fact that the ex-presidents were smart? Like this one gang, they're fucking morons. They could never pull this off.
No, they're thugs.
They're thugs. They could never do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you especially get into that climactic scene where Bodie's brought Utah in and is holding Tyler hostage, Laurie Petty hostage, and doesn't give him the mask. Like, everything's already starting to crumble at that point.
Yes.
And it crumbles pretty much completely for him after that heist. Goes long.
He loses his focus.
Yeah. Well, he even messes up by saying go for the vault.
Yes,
right? Like he's going for the big haul. Like he
thinks this is the last one, and they better
rails.
Do it.
Yeah,
yeah, and yeah,
which was dumb.
The greed was the downfall of the gang at that point. But we're jumping around and skipping ahead, and that's okay.
Yes.
I think because these movies are so different.
Yeah, they're not the same movie at all.
No, which is, you know,
they use the
refreshing
names, but that's about it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm not, obviously, the remake was not a success, but I'd certainly give Erickson Kaur and Kurt Wimmer some kudos for taking the general idea and going a different, doing something different with it, not remaking a movie that people already like. Sometimes that's going to work. Sometimes that's not going to. But going in a different direction, doing a different animal, I think that's the perfect way to do it. Script probably needed another year of development.
Oh, for sure.
But overall, like that was, I mean, the general idea is probably what I would have done.
But
the extreme sports and stuff.
They ditched part of it. Like, I don't know. What I liked about the original Point Break was Johnny Utah. He's an athlete, but he's not naturally, he doesn't do all of this naturally. For the beginning.
Yeah, he was a former football guy who blew his knee out.
He's athletic, but he isn't automatically great at everything. And in the new one, they just eliminate that.
Yeah. Ironically, Keanu Reeves was wanted to get into hockey, and he blew his knee out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Canadian kid, what are you going to do?
And I mean, they made that blown out knee a part of the plot as well. during the chase scene. There's twice where his knee gives out on him.
Yeah.
Right? It's actually part of the plot is what's happening with that knee.
See, and that's what I appreciate that vulnerability, which they were missing from the new one.
Well,
the fact that he's not automatically great at everything, like he's good, but he's not.
Yeah, he's
experienced in absolutely everything.
Yeah, he's that reckless YouTube star. He's got financing and everything else. And through the death of his friends who did all these stunts with him, very cliffhanger kind of opening where he loses mm-hmm. his buddy in something he's pretty much responsible for.
Yeah, in the new one, it's just he's responsible for it. And that, but that,
it just, it's a different.
It replaced the knee, though.
It's a different torture
not
device.
Really.
There's two different plots in the remake where the death of somebody else hits him very heavy because that's his weak spot.
Yeah,
is being responsible for somebody else's death.
Yeah, he doesn't want that responsibility anymore, which is weird that he went in the FBI, but...
Yeah, see, I don't know. That just feels like a very tacked-on type of deal.
No, I
don't get
feel
it.
Like that's a... They wanted to give
oh, my
a
friend
layer.
Died, so I'll join the FBI?
No, the reasoning's for... That doesn't drive...
It's flawed, for sure.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it doesn't drive his direction of his life choices at that point, because I'm like, that makes you even more responsible for the people around you, I would think.
Yeah, I don't get it.
But... Yeah, at the same time, you don't drop off resumes at the FBI. They talk to it, though.
They talk about how he went back and got his GED and went to school so that he could join the FBI.
Yeah, because the FBI is what helps people not jump cliffs and lose their friends. This is what I don't get. It doesn't make any sense.
No, well, this could have been the next desire for him. Like, his first love was those extreme sports.
Or make it at least related to how he lost his friend.
Yeah.
Like, if they did that, I could get it.
I mean, he's all depressed.
Well, let's go back to the FBI, just in general, in the remake, seeing as we're jumping around. What the hell were the FBI doing it in the first place? Not one of those crimes took place on U.S. soil.
Oh, well, they're saying that's because true. It was U.S. money or a U.S. company. Yeah, the gold was like, I think it was owned, it had U.S. Yeah. rights. Like, the company that owned that mine was U.S.-based. That's the whole point. That's why they went to these other places, because where the money, the origin of the corporation who owned either the rights or the money were U.S.
Yeah, and that's why Pappas comes in as well, because he's a division of, what would they say? I didn't
even hear anything.
Oh, yeah.
About
no, he was based in France, but I do believe he was, what's that? International? Interpol. He was Interpol.
He was Interpol.
See, Interpol makes sense.
Yeah,
but
they did say
not
that.
FBI.
Interpol
has good relations with the FBI, Americans and stuff.
Yeah,
CIA.
That's what I was about to say. CIA makes more sense.
Interpol would make even more sense, right? Because it wasn't spycraft. It was really common
but
crimes.
We do admit the whole point of that has nothing to do with story. The whole point of that is because they wanted a movie where they could go around the world doing all these things that look beautiful.
Oh, and boy,
it has zero to do with story as to why this guy, why Pappas is Interpol and why he's FBI and why it has to be U.S. stuff.
No, and that's one of the flaws in the remake
motivations are fairly thin in the movie for the most part. When they do give some motivations, at least for your, I don't know, quote unquote bad guys, I'm not overly bad, but when you do give them their motivations, they're kind of ludicrous. But at the same time, those action sequences and locations were gorgeous.
But here's the thing. You're saying their motivations are kind of ludicrous, but I don't know. You see people do crazy shit all the time and their motivations are ludicrous.
But
so.
I don't think they're any more or less ludicrous than the ones in the original. Like, you are robbing banks to finance your going from wave to wave.
Yeah.
That's fucking stupid.
Exactly. Like, I don't think it has to be simple, but these guys have to do the 8 tasks of Osaka.
Yeah, the Osaki 8 is what it's called. And
that's what they decided to come up with.
Yeah.
Like, they went really big on trying to make a motivation.
Well, what they wound up doing
deep,
is this extreme sports religion without, they kind of created something new without having to reference another religion. Although I think there was definitely some Buddhism influences in.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, actually, where did I write this down? Bodhi means wakefulness, which is short for Bodhisattva. And it's a Buddhist term meaning enlightened being who, out of compassion, forgoes nirvana. in order to save others.
Yes.
And that actually is...
Fits better in the remake.
Yeah, it fits better in the remake. That is a driving force in the remake, and a line they should have used in there and didn't.
No, and
but it became the theme of that movie.
It really did.
Do you remember the section of the movie where they just wanted to like launch this point home, and there's like basically about a half an hour where they say this Osaka 8 like 20 times?
Yeah, when they really get into to the Osaka 8.
You know the Osaka 8? Well, what are you talking about the Osaka 8? Well, the Osaka 8 is this. Oh, so this is the Osaka 8?
Yeah, because
this is the Osaka 8.
I actually wound up looking it up to see if this was a real thing. No, they just made this shit up in the movie, which is why they pushed it at you so much. I mean, in the remake, it's the only reason Samsara is really there, is to kind of, again, fine point all that shit.
I could edit this movie. She wouldn't show up once and you would not notice.
Oh yeah, it wouldn't.
No, her, for sure.
Her presence would make no difference whatsoever. Although
they took an actual character from the original and just eliminated her.
No, this is a different name. They didn't even try to make it's not Tyler at all.
Well, no,
they tried to make her the love interest, but it
failed miserably.
It fails miserably. It just wound up being a one-off, a one-nighter.
She's just vagina exposition.
Yeah.
We need something with tits that will tell everybody what's going on.
Although this was the first movie for Teresa Palmer after her pregnancy, and she named her son Bodhi, and that was all before. So interesting connections there without meaning anything at all.
No.
But yeah, she didn't need to be there. She was certainly eye candy. Even I
or
noticed.
If you're gonna put her in, don't just God. If you can't figure out how to write a woman, find a woman. Because guess what? Go outside. Rumor has it there's billions of us.
Easy now.
I'm sorry.
It did feel like it was just
shoehorned in,
yeah. And you know this Baywatch kind of scene. The only thing I even wrote about that scene was Samsara is a smoking hottie.
Yeah, there's nothing else to say.
Although she had a great line, because she is... Something made a noise on my computer. So Samsara says something during her scene, because she doesn't have very many of them. But I always felt she was a bit of the Oracle-type character, and she has a great line saying, "Nature will always find a way to make you feel small." And I really dug that line.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some great writing in both these movies where there's some real gems of wisdom and spirituality and so on. They're both have them. Does it make the overall movies great? No.
It feels like in the remake the spirituality stuff feels more heavy-handed, and especially the environmental themes of the film are very heavy-handed. But it became a bit of a message movie, and I don't mind messages being delivered via metaphor and stuff. It felt a little too in your face, and I think maybe that's why people reacted negatively to the film, is they don't really like being reminded about these environmental messages, because we get it every day. I don't know
if that was it. I think it's probably like they're saying, "We saw XXX. That was good."
And this is what XXX could have been.
Yeah. This is XXX.
XXX wasn't that good either. Sorry.
Hey, they had a better female character.
It's a fucking Oscar movie compared to the second one, but I think it's one of the
weakest
movies.
But like an extreme sportsman who's working for the government, this is XXX.
And I will admit that I was thinking that was watching the movie, but I was thinking that this is what XXX could have.
Oh yeah,
it could have been right, because it is a superior movie to XXX.
Oh yeah, right. I will give you that.
Yeah, it doesn't have like some of the stiffness in the dialogue that XXX had, for sure.
Yeah, and it's got Edgar Ramirez, who I have to say is great in this. I think he's the best thing.
He definitely did really good. I mean, they took their time filming this thing too, because they traveled to 4 countries, 11 locations over a course of about a year to do it, because you want those prime seasons and stuff, and sometimes the weather doesn't work for you.
And it's on screen. All of that is on screen.
Oh, where was that final scene in the remake?
In the ocean?
No. Oh, sorry. Venezuela? Yeah, Venezuela.
Yeah.
There were
Angel Falls.
Angel Falls, which is a protective site. So they spent, I don't know, about $1.5 million to build this platform that wouldn't impact on the environment at all.
Nice.
For all the crew and stuff. And I guess it was a complete fucking nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
But, it became a bit of a military shoot for them in some regards.
But you've got to admire their commitment to getting the shot they want.
Oh, for sure. My God. You can tell
it's beautiful.
The cinematographer, which is the director, which is Erickson Kaur, who's mainly a cinematographer. And okay, like it or dislike it, he was the cinematographer on Fast and the Furious and the Daredevil movie, which
cinematography on that was fairly decent, I would say.
Yeah, it's a visually
the movie
okay
itself
movie.
Not great, but visually it's good.
Whatever the faults with that movie, I wouldn't lay it on the visuals. So.
Oh, for sure, not at all.
Especially given what I saw in this remake, I think he's probably one of the best cinematographers in the world. He just needs better scripts.
Mm-hmm. And maybe not to direct so much. I'm not sure if he's quite ready to be a director. You know what? I'm going to take that back. I think he was an adequate director.
Yeah.
I think he did get hung up on the visuals a little bit and failed to fill out his story.
Yeah.
How much of that is him and how much of that is script?
Well, as a director, you have a certain amount of say into what's going on with the script, too, right?
True, but Kathryn Bigelow was a fairly new director when she did the first Point Break, and I don't think that's a perfect movie either.
Oh, like, no.
They both learned. Mm-hmm. I think he will become a very competent
director. Oh, I agree.
Director.
That's why I said I'm taking
it
back.
He's well on the way. Unfortunately, I don't know if he's going to get another chance for a while. Given the failure of the
film.
They
don't like it when you don't make
no,
the money.
So I don't think it's going to impact anything on his cinematography career, though. Holy shit, he's really good at it. But
yeah, the two movies, this one is beautiful.
I would like to see him grow. I think he can grow as a director, for sure. And as Kathryn Bigelow did, because I'm sorry, there are some flat fucking performances in Point Break, the 1991. Oh, man. When he reveals to Tyler that he's an FBI agent, and she storms out, and then he leaves a message on her machine.
I love that scene, though.
It's fucking horrible. It felt like it was the blocking for the scene, and they must have lost the other takes or something. It's just so flat. It's awful.
There are some moments that are a little flat, and I mean, that was, to be honest, kind of typical of a lot of those early 90s action films, though. They were hammering them out.
They were.
Right?
I was actually getting disillusioned with action movies around that time.
Yeah,
you know that.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And it's simply because, they were all about the action, and there's very little actual acting in them. And as I said earlier, I think that Keanu Reeves is a far more competent actor than most people give him credit for.
Yes. Oh, my Own Private Idaho and...
Yes.
And, I mean, if you want to go back to action, I mean, I love the Matrix movies, and they did fizzle by the third one, for sure.
But the first one was great.
First one's great, and I'll defend the second one to my dying day. But if anybody needs another example, go watch John Wick.
Yes.
Fucking amazing.
What's that samurai movie he just did a couple years ago?
Oh, okay, I didn't like that.
Oh, I... You know what?
47 Samurai or whatever.
I didn't see that one. 47 Ronin. And I did like it. I thought that he was really good in it.
I won't take anything away from him. It wasn't the movie for him. I hated it. I hated it so much.
But yeah, no, I don't know. Out of the two Utahs, Keanu's still my favorite Johnny Utah. I prefer him.
I honestly don't know. Both of these movies kind of sit in even keel for different reasons for me. So I don't know what I prefer. I mean, there are certain things that really turn me off about the characters in the newer one. And I don't know. I think right around the Samsara scene when she's getting introduced, and I'm like, so many tattoos. Why are there so many tattoos?
I know. Well, because that's very much an extreme sports thing, and not even extreme sports anymore. Everybody has
it. It's a cultural thing.
It's a cultural thing, right?
But that's how you show your extreme. You just have more tattoos?
I don't know. I just it was starting to get a bit distracting to me after a while.
There were a lot, and I'm like, this. I just started looking at the tattoos for a part of it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah,
I wasn't even listening.
I'm like, guys, overkill much?
Yeah, and they were a bit of a distraction. I'll agree with you. They were. Right?
It was just a bit overkill to the point where it was distracting me from the film.
But there's one point where the tattoos are used to make a point at the scene where he's first being interviewed by Delroy Lindo.
Yeah.
Right? When he's talking about why he wants to be an FBI agent. He makes a very pointed look at the tattoos that show on the back of his hand.
Yeah. He covers them up. Utah pulls back and kind of covers them up.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was something they were trying to say there. I don't know that it conveyed, but there was definitely something they were trying to say.
Yeah,
with that.
I wasn't sure what that message was either. Like, I don't have a problem with tattoos.
No.
I just had a problem with every fucking character having them. like, you know, like they were just littered with them, and it was becoming too much.
Lousy,
like
I said,
when it becomes really loud, it started feeling like an ad or something. I felt like, I'm like, are we going to break into an episode of Inked here in a minute?
Well, what's funny, and this is my understanding, I may not be 100% accurate, but most people who spend a lot of time in the water don't get a lot of tattoos because the salt water fades them anyhow.
Okay, yeah, so then...
Yeah, that so, although the it became less about the surfing scene.
Oh, absolutely!
In the remake, it was a lot of different extreme sports.
Yeah, the surfing, see, I feel some first of the last, right?
Yeah,
some of the script was like they had all the key scenes of all the extreme sports and just built this story around it as best they
could. It felt like a Jackie Chan movie in that way. It felt like this. Choreographed all their action scenes and then wrote a story around
it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree with that, actually, because those action sequences were dazzling.
They were the star of the movie.
And the quiet scenes were awkward.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't think the 1991 Point Break suffers nearly as much from that.
No.
Like
I didn't suffer the fatigue of the remake gave me like fatigue for action sequences.
Yeah.
The original Point Break, I didn't suffer like, you know, action sequence fatigue.
Well, that's because Point Break isn't about surfing. It's about bank robbers and being undercover.
Mm-hmm.
Surfing was just part of the story.
Yes.
It wasn't about the surfing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whereas the remake was about the extreme sports and the message they were trying to share through their actions as extreme sports enthusiasts.
Yeah.
Right. So it became about the sports rather than about the crimes.
Yeah. And that's probably where a lot of it fell down, where you're kind of like, you lose your focus. Like, I don't know. I liked when the original one where he kind of becomes part of their little tribe, but it's not about the extreme sports. It's about doing these things that are like enjoyable. Whereas the real one, I didn't really get that much.
I don't know because... when Utah first shows up, there is hostility from these guys. You know, Utah makes the faux pas of stealing the wave, which also gets him in trouble because he goes down, Tyler snakes him out, and then gives him crap for stealing the wave.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not really wanting to let him in the group. The only one that's kind of friendly to him is Bodie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still true in the remake as well. They're very hostile, and only Bodie's wanting to let them in, and they stay hostile until their wingsuit scene. And or is it skydiving or just skydiving?
It's base jumping with wingsuits.
Yeah, the base jumping scene with wingsuits.
Which, FYI, you don't just do.
Well,
either you know what you're doing or you become a splat.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bodie.
If you've never done it before, you would have been dead.
Utah, they do say he was a polysports guy. Like, it wasn't just the motocross or whatever. So he's got experience in a lot of different areas. We just don't see it. They do say it.
Bodie actually asked him, have you done this before? And he says, yes, but never from a base jump.
Which is different.
Right?
Yeah. And that might have been a good spot to lose one of those guys and go splat on a wall, but
yeah, they decided to lose him later on.
Yeah, they did, which is fine. I mean, at least we got it. I kind of liked it as they were getting picked off during these type of things, rather in the remake where it was the bank heist specifically that goes wrong.
Yeah,
but I liked that part because that seemed to be everything falling apart all at once, and you can see the desperation of Bodie just coming to a head.
Sure, and you know, after doing that base jump too, they're all pretty bonded after that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I know I would be. Like, that's a hell of an accomplishment to survive and come out the other side of. And yeah, that would bond anybody.
Yeah, and I think that feeds into the next event, as it were, with the snowboarding, because he's now bonded with them, mm-hmm. and then he takes the lead on that whole snowboarding event.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He does, and that's where some responsibility kicks back in. He loses somebody else.
That's right. So,
well, that's where he mostly started boarding, because they do make reference to, like, he was snowboarding is kind of where he started his athletics.
Yeah, well, and then he makes his reveal on that mountain as well, that he's actually FBI, which Bodie already knew. And the scene I hate in both movies, when he shoots in the fucking air with his fucking gun, screaming. Oh, I hated it when Keanu Reeves did it, and I hated it in the remake as well. The only time I liked it was in Hot Fuzz.
I don't know. The original
good. Because
it's
stupid.
The original good, but the second one, it really felt shoehorned. Like,
it felt shoehorned in the first one, too.
Stupidly awkward and shoehorned in the second one.
It looks hokey and...
It's hokey and dumb.
Yeah, I have to agree with Jay on that. That's one of my few cringe points in the original movie.
Yeah.
And it's certainly when I saw it happening in the remake, I'm like, really, guys? You had to take that particular scene to carry over into the new one.
Yeah, and I think it's memorable for people because...
I think it's because of Hot Fuzz. That's why it's in there.
Well, every time I've ever seen the original Point Break, it pops me out of the movie. Totally pops me out because it feels so bad. It's such a bad scene. But it also makes it the most memorable scene because it's hard not to forget such a bad scene that pops you out of the movie, which is probably why Hot Fuzz did it, because it is a memorable scene
because
of that.
It's a key point in there.
But it is so terrible. So terrible. Fucking hate that scene.
Yeah, because like any trained FBI agent's going to do that.
If you relax into it, it's fine.
Yeah, they say that about a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly.
If you relax into it.
It's fine.
Yeah, no. There's some things you can't relax into. Just open up that ass just a little bit.
Oh, no.
No, can't do it. Can't do it.
Not what I meant, but okay.
Yeah. I was leaning towards a dirty joke, and nobody was on board.
Yeah, we get caught up on that occasionally, but not today. Not today.
No, that's not on
was
me.
That, the
that
point,
wasn't me.
Was that the point where you broke? Nothing? All right. Okay, well, the Zaki 8 are The Emerging Force, The Birth of Sky, Awakening of Earth, Life of Water, Life of Wind, Life of Ice, Master of Six Lives, and Act of Ultimate Trust. Now, if that doesn't sound like 8 things of bullshit, I don't know what does.
Oh, it's pretty bullshit. You know what I really liked but didn't like, was the fact that nobody really knew what the 8th thing was.
That drove me nuts.
It's like, really? You don't know what the 8th thing is, but you got to do it?
Yeah, I don't fucking get that. What if he's wrong? Maybe that's not it.
They even make a point of saying the guy who came up with this died on the third one. Like, so you just pulled this shit out of your ass? Like, how do you base this path to ultimate enlightenment?
This is just the theory.
Yeah, this path to ultimate enlightenment and respects, I guess it's kind of like the Hercules parable.
Yeah.
These 8 tasks to enlightenment that you have to fulfill. Mm-hmm. But the guy who created it only got to the third one, where the fuck did he get it?
Yeah, like how,
like, how did he come up with this idea in the first place?
Just a theory.
Yeah, it's not validated in any way.
No.
So, I mean, they admit later that he didn't actually die on the third task. He died doing something else. But regardless, nobody's completed the 8, therefore, how can you be sure that this is...
Yeah, right? And that
but
is
that's
their
like
mission.
Any type of fate, right?
Yeah, you don't know.
Rather than going wave to wave to wave, these guys are doing this as enlightenment. And these heists that they do along the way are giving back to the earth.
They're offerings.
They are offerings and giving back to either the people or the earth.
Yeah.
And it is a bit of a Robin Hood kind of thing that they're doing during their first, The Emerging Force, I guess, which is where they liberated the plane of all that cash. Was that the,
no,
that
no.
wasn't the first
the
one?
The first one was the diamonds
and
the bikes.
Yeah, the first one was the diamond on the bikes. Yeah, in a 110-story building. Or there are 110 stories up in this building.
And why did they have the bikes up there?
I don't know how, like, nobody noticed them going up the elevator with the
bikes. Like, what was their exit strategy? Because they're like, oh no, but now we have to
exit out
here.
They had to get the bikes into them, so they used the bikes, the motocross bikes, to just grab the diamonds and
it's hard to move office furniture in an elevator. I cannot imagine a bike.
And then they crash through the window and then parachute down. They're like, well, that's a hell of a good quick escape. I wouldn't want to be the guy underneath the bike when it hit the ground, but...
Yeah, and then they did, the second one was the money.
The money, which is the and that's what
which
gets
is actually
the Americans.
Third one. Because remember, he finds a third one that connects them all together.
Yeah, and I can't remember what that one was.
Well,
it was unmemorable.
Do have the list here. Okay, the Emerging Force, that's where they navigated the Inga Falls Rapids.
Yes, oh, that's right.
That's the rapids.
And that was shot in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And that was the first task. And yeah, because by the time Bodhi gets in, they've already done three.
Mm-hmm.
The Birth of Skye was the base jump from a high top. And so they base jumped from Everest. And we do see that clip during Bodhi's thing with the FBI. And the third one was Awakening Earth. And that's where they penetrate in the Cave of Swallows after a skydive, which was San Luis Potosi, Mexico. That was the money. And what they did, they opened up one of those big planes that opens up from the back. You guys all saw that in Fast and Furious 6, that mile-long chase on the tarmac. That type of plane. So they opened up the back.
It was
released,
a little smaller.
Released the money, and then they released the pallets of money and just let it float down over Mexico.
It did look spectacular.
It looked great. And then what they wound up doing was diving into this deep cavern. Mm-hmm. So they were skydiving into a cave, essentially.
Which is fucking precision.
It's precision, and wow, did it look great.
Yeah.
It looked so great.
Because you can't just do that.
Four was Life of Water, and this is where Bodhi and... Utah meet. The Life of Water was the surf a giant wave about 20 to 30 meters high and in the Biarritz, France. And that goes bad because Bodhi has to get rescued by, or Utah gets
rescued. Utah has to get rescued by
Bodhi, which was Tyler in the original film. And mm-hmm.
Well, you know, because women are useless and we got to get rid of a character.
Yeah, I did. It did bother me that she didn't wind up being the stronger female character. I mean, she does go on a heist later on, and that was another crazy.
That was a very crazy shoehorned death. That was absolutely pointless.
The fact that he didn't throw away his badge like Keanu did in the first movie after he finished off, because you'd figure that death would haunt him the mm-hmm. most, because he fucking shot her.
Yeah, he's the one who killed her.
Yeah, so. The fact that he didn't toss away his badge at the end, I'm like, oh, you should have done that.
This really ties into the whole fact that in this movie, she's just pointless.
Yeah, because Bodhi's
she is disposable and pointless.
Bodhi is a shitty FBI agent.
Oh, no, Bodhi Utah, you mean?
No, Utah's a terrible FBI agent.
Utah. I'm getting my names mixed up. Utah's a shitty
Bodhi's good at what he does. Utah is terrible.
Yeah, he's terrible. Okay, so that was the fourth. The fifth was Life of Wind, where they fly in the wingsuits and do the base jump with the wingsuits. Six was Life of Ice, and they snowboard down a really big mountain, and that was in Aosta Valley, Italy. And the seventh was Master of Six Lives, and that was climb a stone wall of a grand waterfall, but they without any... accoutrement. It was free climbing.
No ropes.
And
no
the
nothing.
Act of ultimate trust also happens there, where he jumps off the waterfall
of Angel Falls. Yeah,
and you know the trust is that he will survive doing so. So that was the eight, Izaki eight, and the fabulous locations as well.
Yeah,
it does feel a bit like it's a tourist ad.
It really is. Well, you can look online. Condé Nast says all the places you can visit in Point Break the movie.
And they're beautiful. They are the scenery, the way it's shot. Like, those are amazing scenes to watch. They're weakly strung together, but they mm-hmm. are really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so, visually, this movie I don't have a problem with. Everything else.
So I'm going to run the trailer for the new Point Break, and we will continue this discussion as Trish releases her disgust of the samsara stuff. So.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of people are we dealing with here? A set of perps with a very unusual skill set. I need a theory.
So why not deploy your chute above the jungle and escape like a normal person?
Because I'm thinking these aren't normal people, sir. I believe that, like me, the people behind these robberies are extreme athletes, using their skills to disrupt the international financial markets. don't care who gets killed in the process.
They call me Bodhi.
There's a few $1 billion of gold down there.
You're gonna steal it?
No, we're going to liberate it.
Oh, you think you're brothers? Now you show me whose side you're on.
These guys. I just need more time. Bodhi, do you have any idea how many people you've killed? How many laws you've broken?
The only law that matters is gravity.
All right, that was the trailer for Point Break 2015. And let's get to the scene on the mountain. It was one of the more climactic heists.
Yes.
And where Utah was really losing faith in Bodhi and them, because they were going from a fairly Robin Hood-esque crimes to something akin to more like environmental
terrorism. We're
going to
kill some people.
Yeah.
It became very aggressive and violent.
Yeah, this is the gold heist on the mountain.
Yeah. Whereas in the original, like, those guys, they weren't looking to, like, just mow their way through people. It was only out of circumstance. These guys legitimately knew that people drove these trucks.
Yeah.
But they considered them enemies so they could all die.
Yeah.
And it was showed the pattern of escalation, but it was, like, it was, like, from... we're going to rob the bank and somebody's going to die by accident versus we're going out and we're going to hurt people because we need to do this for our own.
Yeah. If they die, path. It doesn't matter because this is on behalf of the earth.
It's always about sending a message to the rest of the world as some environmental thing. I mean, they are environmental terrorists in a certain regard.
Yeah.
To a certain regard, but you know what? How can you share a message if nobody knows what your fucking message is?
That was the thing. Who knows that they're doing this?
Yeah, well, and that was a bit, like, they're robbing all this money to give it away, but so they actually have to get financed by some rich guy. Is he even aware that they're doing this stuff? At some point, the FBI freezes assets, so they lose their funding and have to go find the money elsewhere. But, and that's a whole other thing altogether, because that guy, all he did was throw crazy parties in a crazy looking house with
which I just kept looking at those parties, and that also made me think Triple X.
Oh, well, he had a crazy boat and a crazy house.
Yeah, he totally
people
did,
were
yeah.
skateboarding on that yacht of his.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, though. I mean, I have to admit it was fun. I mean, there were parties in the original as well.
Yeah,
these ones are just far more extravagant.
Oh yeah.
And, I mean, I was joking before we off Mike here about how the most famous person in the movie was the DJ Steve Aoki is the DJ at one of the house parties and has some dialogue.
The one
there.
Is it the one? Oh, it's the one at the house.
The one at the house.
The wild looking house.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, the yacht was just equally wild looking. It was, they had a skate park on that yacht, and you know, they're having a big old party in the middle of this ocean with some pretty gnarly waves.
I know, right? I don't know. I just kept looking at it going like, yeah, these are parties I would never go to.
And we're seeing some big boats going over these waves. Although the final scene in the movie where it got even 100-foot waves, and he's out there by himself in this tiny little trawler boat, and it's not going over waves. It's barely in fact, when Utah's on the boat, like they're not even hanging on to anything. It's all pretty even. I'm like, oh, well, for gnarly waves, they're not particularly
gnarly.
Yeah, they must be stuck in between or something.
They should have brought somebody in who worked on a perfect storm.
Yeah.
That would have helped.
But they showed all the big boats in the earlier scene when they first meet.
Oh, well, that guy had to go home. He couldn't.
Yeah, I guess he could only do that once.
Well, I mean, part of the after at the end of the movie there where Utah gets off the boat and says, yeah, let him go. We'll pick up the body later.
Yeah.
Bodhi's making a point of tying and pointing the boat into the wave, right? Because you can ride a boat through a trough.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And that may be what was happening there. It just wasn't very
well. He was clear. Trying in the last one. He was trying. He couldn't. He needed to get up to get to the top to like catch that wave. You can't really start from the bottom. So that's what he was trying. I don't think the boat was supposed to survive that anyway. He tied it all up, so he wasn't supposed to get it.
Well, anywhere. Let's go back to that mountain.
Yeah, the mountain's a really good place to sort of start talking about the really big differences between Bodhi's, right? Mm-hmm. You've got Patrick Swayze and Edgar Ramirez, who are both probably the strongest point in both films.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Bodhi had to be a strong actor. Yeah.
Well, he's got
and
a
I don't
want to
call
charisma.
Him the bad guy. They're the antagonist.
Yes, for sure. Right?
Because they weren't really bad guys. They were misguided.
You can see the appeal of both. Yeah. Like, both of them, I'm like, I'd follow this guy to do some stuff. I would hang out with him. He's awesome.
For me, more so Patrick Swayze, I found him far more charismatic, mm-hmm. right, and personable. Mm-hmm. He was just generally more likable. I found Ramirez to be engaging, but I didn't like him.
He's compelling, but I don't know why I
enjoyed
him.
I warmed up to him, but it took me a while.
It took me a while. Well, he's much more guarded than Swayze's Bodhi. Mm-hmm. He's much more hard to get a hold of. Like Swayze's Bodhi, he's more gregarious just because he doesn't care. This is how he's living his life.
And Ramirez's Bodhi was always testing people. Mm-hmm. He was always testing somebody. He was testing himself. He was testing Utah. He was testing his crew.
Yes.
Right. And he didn't get the same sense of, as you put it, the same sense of family or tribe. But these guys were a gang. They weren't really, they're all trying to accomplish the same goal, but they didn't feel as invested in it.
Well, Edgar Ramirez is Bodhi. He says this a few times where he's like going, well, you know, once he's following your line, that becomes his line. You're not responsible for it. Anybody else does. Like, there's that lack of responsibility that I think makes it harder to warm up to him because it's very much along the lines of like, you can follow me, but whatever happens to you happens. I don't care.
Really. And it shows later on that mm-hmm. he really does not have anything invested in any of these people that he calls his friends.
Yeah, no. Right? But the original Bodhi, you could feel it's a family. He loves these guys.
Yeah. Going to Roach's death, like when Roach is shot there, like he is agonizing over it. Like he is heartbroken that two of his crew members are already dead, mm-hmm. and Roach is dying.
Yeah, when Gromit goes down, he's shattered. Like, he loses it. That's when he starts killing people. Like, he loses it.
It really is a clear line as to what breaks him, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it's clear in the first movie, whereas nothing really breaks Bodhi in the...
No, it feels like even when his friends die, there are moments of respect, and there's always that, I will see you later kind of thing. Like, this was an inevitable end for them. They all knew the risks, and he makes several points of saying they knew the path they were on. Mm-hmm. He even says it to Utah because he knew about his friend dying on that needle point in Arizona or wherever that was.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, your friend chose to do that. That wasn't your fault.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can certainly make arguments from either point of view there. But it's always from a point of respect that, we all know the risks of this, that we could die at any moment. And they do, was it Chowder?
Chowder was the snowboarding.
Yeah, was that where they take his body back?
Yeah, he's the one body they retrieve.
And they burn him in a big fire pit.
Yeah. And then that's where the party happens.
And then they have a big-ass party.
And, I mean, that's, to be honest, I think when I go, that'd be the way I'd like to have my life celebrated too.
Yeah.
Right? But it's his lack of...
That's fine, but there's a coldness about it.
Yeah, the coldness.
Well, there was a point during that part, like, he's sitting alone quietly. So I'm not saying it's the most impactful thing. It certainly doesn't have the impact of Swayze's performance.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's struggling so much with... I think he's upset at how much he feels about this. I don't think he's upset that his friend's dead.
That's actually
I think he's upset.
That's a good interpretation that, you know, we're a man down and he can't experience the next thing with us.
Or he knew what he was getting into and I shouldn't be upset about this.
But he's upset.
His own emotions, which is like kind of, I think that's more along kind of the Buddhist philosophy of this is like lack of desire and lack of need is like to try and find that nirvana to like kind of eliminate yourself from like the pain of the universe.
His character certainly has interesting layers. They're just not very well defined.
No.
No, they're not. And like I said, no fault of the performance. I mean, he was excellent.
Yeah. He's so compelling.
And I said, like, and I didn't like him when I'm first introduced to him, but I certainly warmed up to him as we went along.
Yeah.
And really liked him by the end.
Mm-hmm.
But
as much as you can like somebody who's flawed as he is.
Yeah. Yes. Well, exactly. And it's kind of like, well, in the end, I didn't like Swayze, but I'm not supposed to by the end where he the levels he breaks to.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I can't say I disliked him but at the end, but certainly I had a lot less compassion for him at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think...
Because both of them, their obsessions become their downfall.
Yes.
Yeah, but part of it, too, is also, I think what the original idea was, it was like, you can see how you get seduced to this dark side, like how Jai Utal gets seduced, but then sees, like, this person is still, you liked him. But he's a criminal. At his heart, he's a damaged person. He's bad for people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what you're supposed to realize at the end of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I like they have one tie-in between the two movies.
Okay.
Yeah, like one of the FBI agents.
Yes.
You may recognize.
That was Roach.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roach from the original. I mean, it's a brief appearance in the briefing.
Yeah, in the briefing. Yeah.
James LaGrosse.
James LaGrosse. I liked his Roach. I thought he was a better Roach.
I thought that the rest of the crew were a lot better developed and a lot more likable in the original Point Break than they were in the remake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Roach in the remake, I found him to be very... He was the most antagonistic of all of them.
Well, yeah. He was kind of the new Rosie. You know,
Rosie.
He was more all business about it. I think he was on his friend's journey for his friend more than...
Oh, he didn't care about the Enlightenment.
He didn't give two shits about the Enlightenment, and he certainly didn't like cops.
No, I think he liked it because of the chaos it caused.
Yeah, he's the truly bad person in the movie. Yeah. Like, he really is the bad person.
I don't think he's a Buddhist. I think he's an anarchist.
Yes.
And he certainly does it well. And another great actor, Clemens Schick,
mm-hmm.
who was in Enemy of the Gates and Casino Royale. So,
nice.
But he was in a Bond movie, is okay by me.
Oh, that reminded me of, when Samsara, like, her ending.
Yes.
That whole thing in Italy.
Yeah, well, it was he's chasing this masked person. He thinks he's actually chasing Bodhi.
But he is not.
Yeah. But hey, to his defense, when, good chase sequence. He basically dives off a mountain onto the sky tram.
Yeah.
And lucky he didn't miss.
I know, right?
And she's shooting up. You know,
shooting
through,
at the roof.
Through the roof and comes through and is shooting at him. So he shoots back, not knowing it's Samsara.
Yeah.
And you'd think if she was in love with him at any point, she wouldn't have been shooting at him. But I guess.
Well.
If they knew he was a cop from Paris,
mm-hmm.
right? Bodhi says,
we knew
you were a cop when you came to Paris.
Yeah.
Right? Why is she sleeping with him?
I don't know.
I mean, are we even making this character even less important? Likeable.
She's not a character. They're just doing that because they needed to put in a sex scene. They needed somebody to talk about that freaking Osaka 8.
Yeah.
That is her purpose. She's not a character. Yeah, she's just a thing they put in.
She's there to drive the plot. But they throw her in because she's never part of the Osaka 8.
No.
She's never part up until that last bit because now there are a couple guys down. She's basically filling a hole.
Yeah.
And
she's filling a hole or a hole to fill compared on where she is in this movie.
Well, and it's awkward, and I feel like there are pieces missing out of this film, and they're almost all her scenes because she's so underdeveloped, and why would she do that in the first place?
They could have made better use of her.
Her being in that scene, I have no problem with her being in that scene, but establishing her just to have her get shot, it's a bit insulting.
It's a lot insulting.
And I will agree that's probably the weakest point in the whole film is that particular...
Yeah.
Sorry, I have to use the word character because there's no other word to call it.
I know.
This is where Gail Simone from my comic book background would say women in refrigerators. She exists solely to get killed.
Yeah.
Really, and I mean...
Have sex and get killed.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I do like is that they killed her, right? No happy ending.
But, thought that was fine, but I could have cared less because I don't know what she's there for.
Yeah, like when she did die, there was no emotional shock or impact. You're right, because there was no relationship.
Nope.
Right? I mean, at least with Tyler in the first one. I mean, you saw this relationship develop from pretty much the beginning of the movie right up to the end.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, she was really shoehorned in. She was there for no discernible purpose.
Nope.
No.
But I had to say, like, the Sky Tram thing, when you're talking about Bond movies, that's what made me think of that.
Yeah.
Like, the Sky Tram thing, that shows up in a few ones.
And
it
is a Bond kind of moment.
It's a Bond trope.
Now, I wanted to bring up two actors from the first film, John Philbin, who was Nathaniel, and Beau Jesse Christopher, who was Grommet.
Yeah.
Both of them were actors on the side.
Mm-hmm.
They were pro surfers.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool.
Yes, I know. Grommet was actually my favorite when I first saw this movie.
Grommet,
I don't know why.
He's the younger one with the sort of...
with the blonde hair, the kind of...
Because he was
guy.
Sweet
the
and
tall,
goofy.
Lanky guy.
Well, he was
stereotype surfer.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if maybe that's where it was born.
I was 17. He was just right.
See, you know, I actually thought you might dig the new one a little bit more, because those guys have their shirts off a lot and they are they are so cut.
That's too much.
It was a little too cut for you.
I don't know. That's kind of like, no, you look too good. I'm gonna go have some pizza. I feel if we do this, both of us are gonna lose respect for you. That's how I feel when I see somebody that cut.
Okay, fair enough.
I wish I laughed out loud.
Yeah, Sam just kind of shakes. It's terrible for podcasts.
It really is. But I was laughing. I've had some things to say about the actor who plays Johnny Utah in the second movie. One thing I like is that Utah's not his real name, it's a nickname.
Yeah,
I like that
good.
Touch, because Johnny Utah is a cheesy freaking name.
Yes.
But at least they make it a little bit less cheesy by making it a nickname.
Yeah.
But I will say that I liked him as an actor.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something missing.
You know what? He's not good looking. He's okay looking, but he's not good looking. And I think that's what I liked about him.
I had no idea who he was, so when I looked him up, and like, his credits are fairly thin as a lead actor.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, the most notable one was G.I. Joe Retaliation as Cobra Commander. They covered him up.
They covered him up, yeah.
And Cobra Commander's barely in that movie, so...
That's...
I don't know. I just see... I would like to see him in more. I think
I guess he's in there a lot.
He's a capable actor, and I think that he does have a future as an action actor.
Yeah, I think so. I saw something in him. I'm not sure he's there yet, but
I don't know if they brought it out.
Yeah.
I mean, working with the limitations of the script and the dialogue, I think that he did quite well. I think he caught that recklessness that they were trying to capture.
Yeah. Well, given the disastrous reviews of this film, he may be getting a few more supporting roles for a little while, but certainly not his fault.
No, he was swimming upstream the whole time.
Honestly, I think a lot of people, including reviewers, had made up their mind about this movie before seeing it. And we're seeing more of that happened now, and that gets reflected in reviews and things like that. And I think viewers in general I think both these movies are kind of on a similar level.
But I think Original Point Break is so beloved, so
I don't
it
know
doesn't...
why.
I like it. I think it's just
enjoyable.
I just
don't see it. It's kind of one of those mediocre action movies that I just don't get people's fascination with. I still don't after seeing it for the third time this week.
I don't know. There's more heart to it, I think.
I don't know.
This one felt colder.
I found the connection between Bodhi and Utah in the original far less tenuous than in the...
Yeah.
It felt more organic and more real.
Yes.
I felt when they started making a connection in the new one, they ended it just as quickly.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't in it long enough for you to buy it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say there.
Yeah,
And it never was a friendship. It was a partnership, right? It's like, we're bringing you into our grand plan, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we don't even necessarily like you.
Yeah, you're a cog. If you get through, you get through. If you don't get through, you don't get through. We don't really care.
I did like the fact that they brought him in. It was a bit of a, they're trying to fix him.
That's the only
bit I thought
interesting.
About,
but, I mean, it didn't really
ring. It was a project. It's like
with that detachment, it doesn't ring as true. Is the problem with that?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I think is because they had a respect from his extreme sports career, and they were trying to fix him from that level. Like, okay, you have the skills, but you don't have the respect for nature and what it provides us.
There's some of that, and
there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of that, but
I'm not sure. I think maybe that's too heavy-handed, and it does take away from the characters.
Well, it does, and there's a point, like they're sort of the first sort of extreme thing that they do with the wingsuits, where they're hiking up that mountain, and they throw in this real. It's a throwaway. It's a throwaway joke trying to humanize these guys, right? Where he's huffing and puffing. And then they ask him, did you bring the rock? And
pass
then,
us the rock.
Yeah.
I like that bit.
That was a good bit.
I liked it, but it was a throwaway. Like, because
they're still being assholes to him.
They are still being assholes to him. And at the same time, it seems like they're trying to make him feel like part of the group. But I don't know.
Well, that was a hazing because the scene before that was essentially Fight Club.
Yeah.
They're beating the shit out of each other.
I don't know.
Yeah, and that really was an experience.
That threw me out.
Yeah.
When you talk about scenes that popped me out, that one popped me out.
That didn't make a lot of sense to me either. I'm like, why is this here? And then he's going climbing them after they beat the shit out of him?
Yeah, and I think they're trying to fit that, parallel the fight between Bodhi and Utah in the first movie on the beach.
Yeah. Right?
But again, it felt a little forced. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen organically like it did in the first movie. And that's the thing about the first one, is everything in that movie happens organically.
Yes.
Right? Like it flows from one bit to the next bit to the next bit. Whereas with this one, it was a little choppy.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're breaking these up with parties, and then sometimes you're like, there's that one scene where they go from wingsuit straight to snowboarding. Like there's no...
Yeah, it goes right one
to the next. There's nothing tying it together. In the sequel, or the sequel remake, sorry. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of why a lot of people didn't like it, is because it wasn't as seamless as the original movie was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you kind of don't get a chance to care as much. It's a great movie to watch if you want to watch really extreme stuff happen. Yeah. That's fine, but I'm not going to watch it to see a relationship of any kind. I'm just watching it to watch the stunts.
Yeah, no, I'm hacking on this movie, but at the same time, I really enjoyed it. I did too. Yeah, I was. Really,
I did not.
Yeah, really, really enjoying it.
I enjoyed it for different things than the other one. I was really enjoying the cinematography, like those locations, so pop. It's like, I would watch this in pieces on an IMAX just because those scenes are so gorgeous. But at the same time, like, it would have been IMAX shorts kind of thing.
True.
I would have chopped it up into those little, here's another extreme sport in a beautiful location.
Yeah.
But because that's, the rest of it isn't very well developed. And
well, what I couldn't quite figure out, one thing that bothered me is I knew it was a lot of it was excuses to get them around the world and to explain it. They had a financer. But I never really understood why the financer did anything.
No.
I felt they wrote a part of that in a script and just cut it out.
The motivations for everybody are really weak in that movie.
This was what I would like to see done with most remakes, is you take the original movie and you take the seeds of the original idea and turn it into something new. But was it well done? Not necessarily.
But I say there's bits of it. You can take the seeds of the original, but don't take some of the worst bits and take that, like try and keep at least some of the best parts. Like,
oh, well, I agree. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, they shoot hard in those little nods to the original. I mean,
I said best parts.
Yeah. Well, not the surfing in the middle of the ocean thing. It is a very similar scene from the first one. I personally like it when movies are different as remakes. You know, we back in our very first episode, we talk about some of the best examples and things like The Thing, like you recreating it whole cloth, and there's really not a lot, even a lot of nods to the first one, but there is a similar structure in that Thing movie.
And that's what I had a problem with.
This actually still has a similar structure. Like, the baseline is still kind of there, but they've wrapped it around an extreme sports thing. Like, if we had done a remaking of type of episode out of this and this movie didn't exist, I probably would have taken that example, that gone in that direction and gone more extreme sports and other sports along with it, because we live in an X Games world now. The X Games didn't exist back in 1991. So, like, at least not on the level it does now.
I was going to say, they did, but not on this level.
It's a
absolutely
much bigger thing. Well, like, UFC was an underground thing, and now it's just mainstream.
Now it's huge.
It's overtaken boxing. So we're now in a different world where, I mean, I totally would have introduced those other aspects to it, and it wouldn't have just been about surfing at that point.
And
so
I would have
definitely done more of that. But, yeah, the character development suffered for the action sequences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I probably could have used another 6 months in the toaster before they popped on that script.
Yeah,
and like I said, and tied this scenes together a little bit better. I think it could have been a really good remake, and it turned out to be an okay remake.
Yeah, it has great ideas. It's just they're really forced at you.
It has okay ideas.
The Zaki 8, it felt like such utter bullshit. And them trying to create a religion without treading on something else. And they're so careful not to offend anybody that it becomes offensive.
Yeah, no, they really did sort of focus on that spirituality from the first one that Bodhi talks about. And they just hammered it. And they made it the focal point of the film.
But they didn't want to tie it to any particular religion as not to offend anybody.
But the whole point of it was like, it's like the spirituality of it is sort of, they took it to such an extreme that they totally missed the point.
I don't know if they missed the point, but they did drive past it.
Yeah.
They drove past it and like did a drive-by shot it and killed it.
Well, you hated it a lot more than we did, but... Mm. Because I didn't hate the movie at all. I really, really did enjoy my time with it. But when your expectations are down around your ankles and land somewhere around your knees, okay, I'm going to enjoy it. And at the end of the day, I did enjoy the movie, you know.
As did I. And my wife was watching. Well, I watched them both with me.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time that she's actually watched
source
material with you at the same time. And she did comment that she enjoyed the second one a lot more.
Yeah. Having come out of the first one, I'm like, oh, right, I don't really like this movie that much. I was really dreading going into the remake. And, yeah, when you're not expecting much out of it, I got a lot more out of it than I thought I would. And I think mainly because of the wonderful cinematography, I like it just a touch more than the original. I'm not saying it's a better movie. I think they're about the same in my mind. I like the first one for different reasons, and they don't seem to be as strong as my visual cues in the second one. Mm-hmm. But I do miss plot, and I don't think either one of them are very strong in that regard. So,
yeah, but I mean, the other one had like a simpler plot, but you're not dealing with a whole lot
the
more
character,
budget.
The
what
character,
they did with what they did
yeah,
was
the
great.
Characterizations drive it. I don't know. That's a high budget movie for the 90s. Like $26 million is a fair chunk of change in the 90s,
but
especially if you allow for inflation and all that.
And especially with a relatively inexperienced director, because this was only like her second film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is back in 1991, that's considered a high budget movie. And the fact that that movie did as well as it even did, because it was up against Terminator 2, which was only had been out for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
She was competing with her husband.
Yep,
she totally was.
She was competing with James Cameron during that time.
She did great.
And that thing was a mega hit. So the fact that that movie did as well as it did, that even anybody even remembers it, is a miracle. I mean, that was also I think Robin Hood probably was out that week as well.
So. Yeah, that was a tough summer.
Well, not tough. It was a great summer.
It was a great summer. But
for us watching movies, it
was a hell of a movie
summer.
Going summer.
Right. Now, to be fair, in 1991, we did not have alternative options to watch films. Either you watched them on VHS or you went to the theater. Mm-hmm. People went to the theater a lot more then than they do now.
Mm, right. It's true.
Right. Yeah.
So you could open up against something like Terminator 2 or Star Wars and still expect to do decent box office because you didn't have other options.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But I think this one also, it did really good with VHS, like rentals. I think it did great.
It did. And actually, I had a rentals number somewhere, and it was they made
because I know I put in a significant amount of money on that rental money
for the original Point Break, and I'm trying to remember if I wrote it down or if I just read it, but it was somewhere around 22 million more that got taken in on just rentals. So that's huge.
That's pretty significant. And I think this movie did well on the fact that it had two relatively big stars of the time in it. I mean, you've got Keanu Reeves, who is definitely at one of the high points in his career, which is and it's nice to see these sort of continue
the stereotype of the dumb kid actor working against him on that movie.
Yeah.
I remember that being a big problem for people.
Yeah. People were like, I can't buy him as that. I'm like, just relax. It's fun.
Here we are now in 2015. And
just relax. It's fun.
That's not even a thing anymore. No problem.
Action-wise, he's doing
Patrick
John Wick.
who just started to establish himself as an action movie actor.
Right? I mean, Roadhouse? And he was doing promotions for Ghost later on the time this thing opens.
Yeah, so he was hot. He was a hot property, and I think that helped push the attendance up.
Well, just look at the cover of that Point Break. Like, you've got Keanu and Swayze right there. It's like, that's
your audience. A sequel had been planned for that, and then obviously they'd thought about it years later, and they were thinking about a sequel to it, and having Patrick Swayze essentially surviving his surfing. But and then Patrick Swayze had passed away through his cancer problems. So that kind of put the kibosh on the whole sequel for Point Break 2.
Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah, death does do that.
Yeah, but I mean,
why are we losing everybody?
Again, you're not allowed.
Yeah, but I mean, that's something that this movie really brings up an interesting point in is back in the late 80s, early 90s, it didn't matter if a movie was good or bad. The actor in it would drive people to the theater.
Yeah.
Right? How many bad movies did people see because, Bruce Willis was in it, or, Blown in it, or Schwarzenegger.
Yeah,
right?
That is true. We're right. Now
there's been a few that I've greatly regretted.
We're more in a story driven world now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if people hear bad things about a movie, they don't go.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter who's in it.
Yeah, but I feel that's what we've got now is the studios need to try and catch up.
Yeah,
because they'll still cast somebody because they'll be like, we need a big name. And thinking that they have to have this big name in the movie, and that's not true.
No, that doesn't drive a movie anymore. But,
but they still think the that.
Yeah. But if you announce a movie's being made and your social media is just going ablaze, maybe you should stop and think about that a little bit.
Because
the audience
that
is telling
happens.
You they don't want it. And I think in the case of Point Break, nobody wanted this movie.
Nope.
I mean, they spent a fortune on it, and we're seeing the summer blockbuster high budget movies, they're starting to overtake some of what used to be the dead zones. It's becoming all year summer movie blockbusters.
Now, this year especially.
We're getting blockbusters further and further apart. And I've been seeing it every year. And we started seeing the really big ones in February, but this was even January. So they were trying, to do a big movie in what is typically a dead zone.
The worst one.
I mean, they had that working against them, but maybe it was just lack of studio confidence in the film. Because of the social media aspect of it, I don't know. It actually says 2015, so they must have had limited opening in December to get a December opening.
Yeah.
But I don't even remember this opening in locally until January.
They may have been just filling theaters at that point with trying to get some money, trying to get some attendance.
And then at that time, you are competing with Star Wars, which was just a fucking juggernaut at the time.
Yeah, there's nothing you
and you had nobody recognizable in there. So, there was no star power.
No.
And I mean, I'm kind of contradicting myself a little bit, but you have to have them at least moderately recognizable actors.
Well, I mean, you're remaking something that the majority of people who like Point Break hold in high regard. So you're already treading on thin ice because as we've established over the course of this show, in fact, our very first episode, our origin episode, we talk about this is there's this thing in Hollywood where they think they got to remake something we already love. Well, we already love it. What can you do to make us love it more? It's an uphill battle that you're probably never going to win. Now, if you take something that had that great idea that didn't work the first time and then recreate a whole cloth, and now we have something like John Carpenter's Thing, which was stellar. And I think before that, nobody really remembered the original that well, if at all. it was just this forgotten thing. And
well, no,
and
I think people did, but I think the whole point was it was they knew this was an uphill battle, and this is it was held in very high regard, well, so they knew they couldn't do it again.
Well, yeah, but they
had to make changes,
but they thought they could, and I'm okay with making changes. Absolutely. In fact, I like I said, I completely support changing the movie. Don't come up with a new idea. They did it with RoboCop, which turned out to be a pretty capable remake, but it was a remake nobody wanted. So it didn't.
Same with Total Recall, which was also, I have to say, was a pretty capable remake.
It was pretty good. Remakes, I think that was
which
one
was also a screenplay by Kurt Wimmer from Point Break here. And, you know, I think changing it, and it still was samey without, I mean, you think Mars is a big aspect of that movie, but it's really not.
It's in the very, very, very end of it.
Yeah, it's not a key element to that film, and I've had this argument with other people. I'm like, you take out Mars, it doesn't really change anything. You could have had that in the same city where you started, and it's Spaceport. Still, that everything still would have worked.
Yep.
So, and I still find, even though it's a very different kind of movie, I feel like the new Total Recall is still very samey. There's more similar than missing. And we will cover that in another episode.
Yes, let's not get into that discussion. We're
And I don't know. Agree, disagree. You can write us over at Invasion of the Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook, and, of course, invasiontheremake@gmail.com. And now we feel like we need to grow up a little bit and find some theme music for our show. Mm-hmm. If you're a musician or know a musicians that would like to submit for our intro, please do it through our email address, invasiontheremake@gmail.com. We're always looking at stuff there. And we're not looking to make money off your music. We're just looking for something for the show. You can exploit it all you want. We just want exclusive rights for our podcast to use it. So, and this will expose you to a global audience. As we've established, we make no money on this show, so it's not a paid gig, guys, but this is exposure for you. So if you know somebody out there, have them submit to us, and we'll certainly take a look at it. We're also going to be approaching other people as well and choosing the best piece, and that will be our theme music for the foreseeable future. So could be a while yet before we have something in place, but we are looking at that next stage of our evolution. As much as I like playing the music that we are doing, I am also tempting the fates of the litigious gods.
Yes.
That's why I keep the clips really short.
What sort of task do we have for this one? The rising of the musical notes?
I don't know.
It's the ninth Osaka task.
Be creative with it. It could be a jingle. It could be something, this evolution between comparison of music from 50s to current. I mean, it's an open playing field, and I'm willing to look at all things. Just know if you're a rapper, I despise rap, but if you do it really good, it is up for
this is the act of ultimate trust.
This is the act of ultimate trust, because how did this get made? Change their stuff, their theme song, and remixed into a new rap version. And I quite like it.
I like
so
that one.
I really like it a lot. So that door is always open. Keep it clean-ish. I know I swear through the show, but at
we
least,
swear a lot.
I'd at least not like to have a lack of swearing in my intro.
But we're not married to it.
No, we're not married to it either. Whatever. You know.
Good is good.
Good is good. Yes.
Now, of course, beyond the music, and hey, the music in this movie, both movies, is great. They have great soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
And
they do.
I have chosen to do some of the music from the newer soundtrack because it just caught my ear a little bit more than the original. But great 80s soundtrack on the original movie, and another great one on this one as well. I think maybe the music might stand out a little bit more than the movie itself does. So even if you didn't like the movie, maybe go seek out that soundtrack, especially considering poor musicians need the help these days.
Yeah.
So go seek out the Point Break soundtrack, now available on Amazon or digitally, iTunes, whatever.
It's got to be somewhere.
Yeah, you'll find it. Just don't steal it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you like the show, of course, tell friends, tell 5-10 friends, tell as many people as you can. If you see us post on Facebook and Twitter, any of our social media, like it and share it with your friends as well. Get as many eyeballs on the podcast as possible. When you're over on iTunes, give us 5-star review. and leave a review if you want as well. Just either spend 10th of a second and give us that 5 stars, or spend another minute and write another blurb. Helps us raise in the charts on iTunes. And guess what, people? We are now available on Google Play.
Woo-hoo.
Google Play Music. Not Google Play, because that's where I get all the games and shit. Google Play
Music. All the apps.
Yeah, you can now find us on Google Play Music for all you Android users. You don't have to download another app or whatever. So you can find us there as well. Although, Google, if you listen to it, get your fucking stats working.
You do so many things, Google. What are our stats?
But it took them forever to get the podcast stuff out. I had submitted that ages ago, and I just got them this week after we had already submitted for our business cards, so it didn't have their fucking logo on it. I'm like, you bastards! Just the business cards have been the bane of my existence this week.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, if you see me at a
they
show,
will be fixed.
Yeah, we're going to be hitting a few conventions and passing out some business cards and things like that. We're gearing up. We're going to hopefully do some shows this year. I don't know, into next year anyway. Still a little thin for this year, but we'll start making some appearances elsewhere.
Yeah, if you want to find us.
Yeah, if nothing else, we'll still be around in social media. So
yes.
Make sure you find us there. Any last thoughts before we hit the waves?
I just want to say that both these movies were entertaining.
I think so, too. Trish really despises the new one. So
don't like
apparently
it.
She agrees with Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. but I will say, it's like Edgar Ramirez, just so watchable.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly interested to see the evolution of these young actors, except for Ray Winstone, who really felt like he wanted to be elsewhere.
Yeah,
we didn't really talk about Ray Winstone, but
that's because it was a different Pappas. All I could see was looking into his eyes, is like going, oh, new garage, new house, new countertops, new like just, this is what this paycheck's paying for.
Yeah, I felt like he was him and Delroy Lindo were the only established actors in this thing, and for at least Ray Winstone, I think it was just a payday.
Yeah, he did feel like he kind of phoned it in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I thought so too. Just grumpy, and I think that was easily come by because he didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
So, as much as I love Ray Winstone, not his best one.
No.
Not his best work.
Oh, Ray. We love you so. Why?
Sometimes it's just, about the paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they have their paycheck movies.
Michael Caine has done lots of stuff. He's admitted.
Oh, the paycheck movies from Michael Caine. We have spoken about that.
Has he ever done a bad performance, really?
No, he gives it his all, even if it's a paycheck movie.
Yeah, go back and listen to our Hand episodes.
Yep.
And we do talk about the infamous paycheck movies.
Yeah, but you have the pro that is Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Freaking does it.
And, even for a paycheck movie,
he'll give you everything.
He gives her. All right. Well, the waves are calling. Well, actually, it's kind of rainy and cold. It's a shitty day to hit the waves. And we're in a landlocked province.
Yeah. If only it'll rain more. But, there's skydiving available.
It's a wave pool with children that are probably peeing in it.
I love that addition. That's where you put that.
Well, it's true.
I'm painting a picture here, people.
I'm just imagining the Caddyshack.
So, staying indoors and editing this episode, I am Jason.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Trish.
And guess what? We're out of here.
Woohoo!
Go on and take the wheel. Turn it back to the start.